Come with me and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look and you'll see into your imagination. We'll begin with a spin, traveling in the world of my creation. What we'll see will defy explanation.
Alfie, you say in your liner notes for this, your debut Decca album, that song, Pure Imagination, from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, would be a really cool way to start a concert. Lovely song, haunting song, by Anthony Newley and Leslie Brickus. And it's one of a luxury selection here of mainly show songs. Several of my favourite soft centres here. Showing another side of your voice and repertoire, and a repertoire that's very dear to my heart as well. You grew up in Lancashire, like I did.
Yeah.
I was from Bootle, Liverpool. I don't know how I got posh, really. So, was there an appetite for all kinds of music in your household?
Yeah, people have been asking me this recently, whether my father, you know, your father was a big classical opera fan, and he never was. We didn't really have that much opera in the collection, in the record collection. In fact, I can reel off some of the names that were on the vinyl records at home in the living room. We had Slim Whitman, Roger Whittaker, Jim Reeves, Frankie Lane, you know, Nana Mouskouri.
They're all horribly familiar
exactly,
to me.
You know, all those sort of names and stuff, Glenn Miller and the big band sounds. Yeah. But we also had albums by Caruso, Tauber, Paul Robeson. So it was a real sort of eclectic mix of music that I grew up listening to, really.
So what were the things that really tweaked at your imagination? I mean, from
Elvis
your...
Presley.
Yeah.
Elvis Presley songs. And the Glenn Miller stuff. I never, as a kid, really did I focus on the classical repertoire that my dad used to play. I never really focused on the Taubers until much later on in life. As a matter of fact, it was... really hit home to me when my father died, and I picked up his record one weekend and put it on, and it just blew me away. The memories just, oh, the memories and the emotion and everything just flooded back, and that was why I then released my Lehar album, you know, because it was something that was very close to my heart.
But even if you'd started, whenever you started singing, I mean, in those days, the idea was you've got to trade, you got a proper job kind of thing. It must have been very difficult for you to see a way in to becoming a singer.
A singer. Well, you know, when you grow up in the North, as you know, Ed, you're always told to get a trade behind you, you know. You do your apprenticeship as a mechanic, a plumber, joiner, because you'll always have something to fall back on, sunshine.
Yeah.
You'll always have something to fall back on. And it's like, well, yeah, okay, well, I will. I'll take your advice. So you go off and you get yourself an apprenticeship, and then it doesn't pan out like that.
Yeah.
You know, you don't really want to be doing that.
Well, you were an apprentice mechanic, weren't you, in
Blackpool,
was it?
Yeah, that's right.
Is it true that the first song you ever sung in public, age 14, was Bring Him Home from Les Mis? Is that true?
Yeah, it was one of the first songs. I don't know if I was between 14 and 16. It's a bit cloudy, really. I can't remember when. And I was so frightened of singing that I think I threw up at the back of the stage before I had to walk to the front and sing it.
God on high, hear my prayer, in my need, you have always been there.
The fact that you were singing at age 16 shows the longevity of that show.
Yeah.
And of course this year has been the 25th anniversary, and you took part in this all-star 25th anniversary performance at the O2.
Yeah.
How did that come about, Alfie? Did Cameron McIntosh, had he seen you, or did you get a call from Cameron McIntosh?
Well, I think Cameron had a lot of interest in you in the past. But I think I have to say, I think it was a bit of a gamble for Cameron and his team to cast an opera singer in a musical theatre piece. I'd like to say I think it paid off, but and they were very pleased with the way it all worked. But they really just approached me a year ago and asked if it'd be something I'd be interested in doing. We were always very, myself and my manager, we were always very careful about what we did. We didn't want to sort of like jeopardise my legitimacy as an opera singer. Mm. I didn't want to get seen as a crossover artist. So to be honest, we were very careful about taking on projects that would push us into a different direction than classical opera. But with this one, we just knew it was right to do.
Well, the role of Jean Valjean anyway needs real singing.
Yeah.
And that number, the title number of the album, Bring Him Home, is all about spin in the top of the voice, isn't
it?
That mix at the top of the voice, which is... which you do a lot in opera.
You do a lot of that. And a lot of the operatic technique that I have and the training that I have helped tremendously. But what I have to say as well is I also learnt a lot more as well with what the voice can do with taking on the role of Jean Valjean. How far you can really push the voice. And damn it, man, I mean, for 2 weeks I was in the West End and I felt as strong as an ox.
Mm-hmm.
Every single night I was singing that role and I was just, bang, it was brilliant. I was on fire. I felt like I could, this is what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And to be honest, it's opened up doors. It's opened up my eyes a little more, and not to be so precious about just singing classical music. There's a lot of good music out there, and I don't want to let it slip by just because I'm an opera singer, you know? I want to sing good music.
The middle eight of that song, He's Like the Sun I Might Have Known,
Is
just glorious, I think. That part of the song where it really starts to soar.
Yeah.
And that's where one needs this bit of heft in the voice.
Exactly. Well, you know, you do, you start off the piece as a prayer. And it is actually in the show as called the prayer. When you get the full score, it's not called Bring Him Home. It's called the prayer. So you sit down and you go, God on high, hear my prayer, my need, you have always been there. Then you go to that middle eight and it's like, He's like the sun I might have known. But that's because you're talking to yourself. You're not talking to God then. That's the difference. The soft, pianissimo, beautiful, sweet singing is to God. That's the prayer. And then He's like the sun I might have known if God had granted me a son, you know. The summers die one by one, how soon they fly, on and on, but I am old and will be gone. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you're telling yourself, you're saying, look, you have to do this, you have to protect this guy for the sake of Cosette. So all those big moments where you let the voice fly are, in a sense, to yourself.
He's like the sun I might have known, if God had granted me a son. The summers die one by one, how soon they fly, on, and I am old and will be gone.
Now you're going back into the show.
Yeah.
Aren't
I
you
am,
now?
Yeah.
When and for how long?
I go back in June for 6 months until December 3rd, I think, is my last performance. I'm performing 6 shows a week, which is...
I was going to ask whether you were doing 8 or 6.
No, I mean, 8's... I need to just have a break as well.
Two shows a day is really tough.
It is tough. I will be doing a matinee day in that run, but there will be moments where we can mix it around a little bit, where I could do, say, a matinee and then bring, you know, the other guy who's playing Jean Valjean, a guy called Johnny Williams. I've got to say, watching him in this role was incredible because he taught me a lot as well. I just taking on how he approached the role, completely different than the way I do it, but that's the beauty of this character. You can have so many different elements to it. And Johnny's great, so we're sharing the role in that run, in that 6 months, and it'll be good. He's a good guy.
Hmm. Now, you studied at the Royal College of Music, Alfie, and it was while you were in the Royal Opera House Young Artist Programme that you got an amazing call. Just remind us of that, because there's a number on the album which relates to that.
Yeah, well, I was given the opportunity while I was at the Royal Opera House Villa Young Artist Programme I was given the opportunity of auditioning to Baz Luhrmann, the movie director, who directed Strictly Ballroom, Moulin Rouge, Romeo and Juliet, and most recently his Australian movie. And to have that opportunity to sing to Baz and hopefully take part in his show, I couldn't refuse, I couldn't miss this chance.
But I love you.
I love you.
Till the end.
Until the end of time.
Come what may. Come what may. I will love you until my dying day. Oh, come what may.
So you were whisked off to Broadway by Baz Luhrmann. I think it's great that La Boheme and his staging played on Broadway.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I mean, it underlines what we've been saying about there being no divisions in the repertoire.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
In the 40s and 50s, a lot of quite interesting musical theatre performances had operas performed on Broadway. So this tribute to Baz here was the love duet from
Come What May,
where you're joined by that rock chick. Musical theatre diva. Isn't she great?
Yeah, she's fantastic. She's amazing. Yeah. Unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to record it together. I was in Denmark. I recorded my line. It was then piped down to a studio in London, and she recorded her line too, over the top of mine. So we didn't actually get a chance to sing together.
Well,
but
until you tell them, nobody would have ever known.
No, I know. Well, that's the thing. Is the beauty of it is how well the two voices seem to line up together. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. What about the issues of style, Alfie? Because we know singing comes from essentially the same place,
yeah.
But obviously when you switch into different kinds of repertoire,
yeah.
There are changes, aren't there, in inflection, the way the voice is used, using the words, because the words are more informal, I guess.
I think there's an element of adaptation that you have to apply to a song that's not of your fach or your genre, but you shouldn't jeopardise the sound that you make. You shouldn't change the sound you make. You know, you should always sing from the same place with the same support, but modify certain aspects of it. Say the pronunciation. If you're going to sing a pop song, for example, or a rock song, you don't sing a rock song with a straight Queen's English pronunciation. You would relax on the pronunciation and add a little bit of a Yankee twang in there,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know what you're saying, yeah.
But that doesn't take away from the fact that you're still using the same support and focus and direction of the sound. And there's a number of artists that do that, you know, Freddie Mercury, George Michael, you know, Elton John even, you know, they have strong voices, but pronounce words in a bit of a Yankee style.
Yeah,
the Beatles,
it's
I think.
Called the vernacular,
vernacular,
isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
All this stuff requires serious singing, actually. And the two great Rodgers and Hammerstein songs that you've chosen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Some Enchanted Evening, I think it's Andrew Lloyd Webber said that, you know, anybody interested in writing musical theatre has to know and love that song.
Yeah, yeah.
And where it comes in that show. It's a great, great song, isn't it?
Absolutely. If you're going to do a musical theatre album, to not have any Rodgers and Hammerstein on there is a pretty shameful, to be honest, you know.
Rodgers, to me, was
incredible.
The greatest popular melodist of them all.
Incredible, man, incredible. And Some Enchanted Evening is one of many songs in South Pacific. You know, there's some incredible numbers. But Some Enchanted Evening, obviously, I think is probably the most famous one.
Mm.
And to me, it's my favourite. And so I thought, let's get it on there, let's put it on.
And it requires an absolutely legit voice.
Well, back in the day, you had to.
Ezio Pinza.
Ezio Pinza, yeah, you had to be able to belt the songs out and have a real sort of solid classical sound.
Because there was no miking then.
No miking.
Interesting.
Who can explain it? Who can tell you why? Fools give you reasons, wise men never try. Some enchanted evening, when you find your true love. feel her call you across a crowded room, then fly to her side.
We mentioned Andrew Lloyd Webber. You've also got one of his power ballads from Sunset Boulevard, As If We Never Said Goodbye. Norma Desmond's song.
It's a Norma
Desmond. Norman Desmond.
No. I didn't want that to stop me from singing a great song. That one and Tell Me On A Sunday, I think, is one of my favourite.
I think Tell Me On A Sunday is possibly his greatest song.
Possibly his greatest song. And I thought, why let that stop me from singing it just because it's a lady's song? You listen to the lyrics. The lyrics are what make the song. Musical theatre, it's lyrics, it's words, it's telling the story. If you concentrate on everything that you're saying, then the acting comes through into the music. And then the music feeds into the acting. The lyrics is something that's so important to me in any song I sing. So if you can really understand what you're saying and really understand what you're trying to deliver, then you'll come up with a good performance.
Funny enough, I've spoken to several musical theatre, well, not musical theatre people, people who've sung musical theatre, and they're saying exactly what you've said.
Yeah.
The singing comes from the same place, but the words define the style of the song.
Exactly. But that song itself, As If We Never Said Goodbye, Norma Desmond is singing about getting back in front of the cameras. How much I've missed you, you know, as if we'd never said goodbye. The lights are getting brighter, you know, and all that sort of thing. But I refer to it personally as a song about missing my family and also what the job that I have to do while I'm away from my family, you know, because it's like I have to get on with this job. The lights are getting brighter. I have to do this performance. And then there's another line in it where it says, we all know I can do it, you know, even though I'm frightened, even though, you know. It's an amazing little song that can mean anything to anybody who listens to it.
I don't know why I'm frightened. I know my way around here. The cardboard trees, the painted seas, the sound here. Yes, a world to rediscover, but I'm not in any hurry, and I need a moment.
How did you go about choosing the songs for the album, Alfie?
I got a list. Oh man, there was a few things actually. I got a list of songs myself that I knew. That was about 20 or 30 musical theatre songs that I thought would be suitable for myself, and they all happened to be male songs. I then started looking on iTunes and checking out other performers, other music theatre albums that were out there, seeing what they'd recorded, seeing how many times they'd been recorded, what year they were recorded. You don't want to release something that's already been recorded quite recently. Also, I asked for advice from friends and from colleagues who are very connected with musical theatre, and the people that are so connected with musical theatre that I've discovered are dressers. Are your personal dressers in the theatres, you know?
Yeah. My dresser. Now there's a surprise.
There you go, exactly, man. But my dresser when I was at the Royal Opera House, a guy called Stephen, he would have a pile of CDs that he'd made overnight for me of 20 or 30 songs on each disc.
Fantastic.
You know, just to say, listen to these. This would be great for you. This would be good for you. So you just ask for people's advice. And I think by the end of it, I got about 150 songs presented to Decca for them. You know, so like, sure, we can find an album out of this lot.
And you've even included a little lullaby for your daughter, Grace.
Oh, well, there's two little lullabies. Yeah, The Pure Imagination from Willy Wonka, but also Hushabye Mountain I have to say this right, because I'm not musical theatre background, so I have made the mistake of saying Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, but now I have to say Chitty. You just have to say Chitty.
Oh,
now.
All right.
That's what you have to say. It's Hushabye Mountain.
I think you're allowed to say Chitty Chitty.
Are you really? Okay.
If you can say it.
I know.
You can get into trouble with it.
I know, yeah, exactly.
A gentle breeze from Hushabye Mountain softly blows all lullaby bay. It fills the sails of boats that are waiting waiting to sail your worries away.
Who's that upstart trying to upstage you on The Impossible Dream?
Oh my goodness.
I mean, did they find him?
They left the door open to the studio and then this guy just wandered in and started recording while I was singing. No, very, very dear friend, very close friend of mine, Matt Lucas. I was staying at his house after we did the O2 Arena concert and crashing out until my family came over to London, and he's actually kind enough to let my daughter and my wife come and crash as well. Oh. So that's nice. We're in the process of moving back from the States, by the way, so that's why I don't just loiter at people's houses. I am in the process of getting my own place and setting up home here. But Matt and me just sparked off this fantastic, strong friendship. We found out that we got a lot in common with each other. We both like football, we both like chocolate and food and stuff. And when I told him I was making an album, that I'd just signed a deal with Decca, and these are the songs that we've chosen, and what do you think of the list? And he said, well, we should do a duet. And I thought, are you serious? Was that just a joke or are you serious? And he said, no, we should do a duet. So I thought, that's a really good idea.
He's not got a bad voice, has
no,
he?
No, he's got a really good voice, man. Yeah. He's a really good voice. Yeah. And anyway, I showed him the songs and I said, look, this is Impossible Dream. We could do this as a duet. Do you fancy? Are you serious? Do you want to really do it? Go for it. And he said, yeah, let's do it. And so we did, and that was it. And we had great fun. The only difficulty is keeping your face straight whenever you're working with Matt Lucas.
Imagine.
And he finds that difficult too. He's a bit of a corpse for himself.
To dream the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave dare not go.
To right the unrightable wrong, to love pure and chaste from afar, to try when your arms are too weary, to reach the unreachable star.
This is my quest, to follow that star, no matter how hopeless.
So far, Alfie, you've managed to maintain a balance of your work without compromising any one of those elements. I'd like to see you more in the West End. I'd love to see someone take you up for an Ivan Novello revival.
Gosh,
really? Those shows are so gorgeous. And
Ed, that's a fantastic idea. It's really, really incredible, that music, you know.
I think so. And, of course, the time may be right, because there is an interest in the past kind of...
I'm not wanting to say goodbye to opera in any way. I just want to open the doors to other things now. Life's too short to worry about what people think of you, you know? If I spent most of my life thinking, should I do this, or would it jeopardise what the Royal Opera House thought of me? Life's too short. There's too much good music out there to sing, and a bigger audience than the audiences that I have been playing to. And I want to take the classical audience with me a little bit as well. If they're willing and they want to jump on the bandwagon and join in with discovering exciting and wonderful music with me, then I'm happy to drive the bus, man.
That's what I've always wanted to do as well. And, you know, even working in the classical fields I do, with this passion for musical theatre, is what I've always tried to do. Well, and it is possible to bring that audience.
It is. I think there's
really
only one...
great stuff.
There's only one or two houses in the UK that are really have mixed the two. I mean, English National Opera, a lot of credit to them. You know, they have tried to bring in some music theatre into their house.
Mm. And Opera North, too.
And Opera North again, yeah. They've tried their hand at that, too. But I just think that the worlds are so close, and the classical world shouldn't be so frightened, thinking that it's going to jeopardise their integrity or whatever it is that they think they need to protect.
Well, let's go back to our roots for the big closer. Mm. Willie Russell's Blood Brothers, which is a show we've all loved over the years. It's such a heartbreaker, that show. And that number, I don't know where it came from in Willie's imagination, but number that bills and bills and bills tell me it's not true is just an amazing number, isn't it?
The song is so strong and it's so simple because it's just four times through the same structure. On my album, we actually do mix it up a little bit, you know, towards the end.
There's and you a, fly at the end fly of it, don't you? Yeah, you really do.
We really take it somewhere else, really. Which is nice to have that liberty to do it. But it's a great song. And one of the reasons why I chose that one was because it was one of the first musical theatres I'd ever seen. I came to London and I got into the habit of trying to go and see a show, you know, scrounging tickets when I could, you know, and getting standing rooms and things like that. So, and Blood Brothers, I came across a couple of tickets for Blood Brothers and went along and didn't know what to expect, you know, didn't think much of it at first, you know, and then I just got drawn in and drawn in and drawn in, and as the show went on, and then I could relate to it because it was my neck of the woods, you know, in Liverpool there, and I thought, this is such a good musical, this is fantastic. And then when you get to the climax at the end and you get to the heartbreak and the shock of how a show can end, just bang like that, it was like, oh, it was like being hit in the face with a cricket bat.
That's why it's still running.
Exactly, man, exactly. And then it ends with that song, and I thought, I'm going to sing that song one day.
And
I have.